Okay, so remember last day we were looking at this this load line analysis. Let's see if we can find that again. Here we are. And this was the RTL inverter load line analysis. And really, the more I thought about it, I think actually this is what they call the source and this is what they call the load. But the funny thing is they call this the load line. So I don't know what the deal is there. It's kind of like this should be the source line and these should be the load lines, right? Yeah. Because, you know, this is the one with a voltage on it, you know, VDD, right? But, so I don't know why they do that. That's an interesting thing. But today what we want to do is we want to do a similar analysis to this, only using for the CMOS inverter, which was, it had a P-channel device up here instead of this RD. So let's start out by drawing our circuit so we can label the voltages and stuff. This guy, which way does he point? Do you remember? Yeah. This is a big signal. I should make it like that, VN. So VN is VGSN. And there's some currents here. This current right here is ID. Oops, IDP, not IPD. IDP. This current right here is IDN. And we'll start with making a big IV characteristic for VDSN and IDN. So this is IDN and VDSN. And then remember we had, you know, this bottom one right here. Maybe I should do that in some other color here. Make it like the curve tracer green. So this is VGSN less than V threshold. And then we got a little bit bigger here. And a little bit bigger. And finally, something like that, okay? And this is, of course, increasing VGSN. So this is VGSN equals V threshold plus 1 or something, and VGSN equals V threshold plus 2, and VGSN equals V threshold plus 3, say, okay?
Where would the line where VGSN equals V threshold?
Be right here. So I should probably put an equals right here. It'll just be right there. Right up to. Still cut off when it equals the threshold. This is just, almost, it's just a move a tiny bit above that line. Okay, so now what we need to do, we're trying to make a setup like this. So we need to kind of relate some variables here because there's actually kind of a redundant set here. What we'd really like to do is we'd like to plot on top of this the characteristics for the P device. And the P device, you know, just as a quick little thing, the P device thing looks like this. Here's IDP. And this, of course, actually, IDP is going up like that. Or maybe I should write it like this. IDP, it's a negative value, right? And this is VDSP. And if I could just write, let's try this again. VDSP. And this is zero right here. And VDSP is actually negative, right? And IDP is negative. And the curves for this guy, here I should grab another color here. Blue and red here. So, should we do these in red or blue? What do you like? Okay, red. Okay, so here we are, right on that. That's the threshold. You know, VGSP, and VGSP has to be negative to turn on. So this would be greater than or equal to V threshold. P, I probably should put an N over here on this one. I'll zoom that green. N. So, all this funny business. How many pens can I get in my hand here at once? Okay, so, and then it comes down, you know, like this, right? And then like this, and finally, you know, like this, right? You got the idea. So this is what this thing looks like. And somehow, we need to put it all together so that it's on the same graph in a similar way that, you know, we got these guys here in a similar way that thing was there, right? So really, this VDD and this nonlinear element right here play the same role as VDD and RD did, right? Okay, so let's write some equations here. We can see, first of all, it's really easy that IDP is equal to what?
Negative.
Yeah, minus IDN. So we just, so basically all we have to do is pop that over here, right? And that is going to be, oh, that's cool, because that's going to pop it over here. We need it over here, there, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so that's cool. And now we need to relate VDSN to VDSP, and how could we do that? Or I really need to write an equation that says, VDSP equals, and I need that in terms of VDSN and whatever.
Equals VDD minus
VDD. Yes, that's right. VDD minus VDSN, right? Okay. So, what does that say? What do I do? I need to translate this VDSP. And I need to figure out how he looks when I would plot him on VDSN. I mean, maybe you could look at this thing right here and say, this guy here implies that VDSN equals VDD.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
So
I got to do VDSN. I bring that over here, so it's going to be VDD, right? VDD minus VDSP, right? So if I was to take this point down here, where VDSP is really big, right? And VDD is going to be some value which is pretty positive. Okay, let's see. Did we say that wrong?
Yeah.
Something's wrong here. So what I want is VDSP, which is right here, right? Actually, this is like minus, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so I need to put minus there and makes that a plus. Is that right?
That makes sense.
Okay, is that right? Because if I took this voltage minus that voltage, that would be minus VDSP. Okay, so let's see. So now let's think about this. So if we're down here on this part of the curve right here, and I take and add VDD to it, that'll put me kind of right up. Up there. So we gotta figure out, let's write a little note over here. Here's about where VDD would be, right? It's going to be a pretty big value for VDS. I mean, it's the whole thing across there, okay? So so VDS is this, it's actually this direction here. So I'm looking at ID, I'm looking at the wrong thing. So I've got to figure out what happens when VDSN is equal to VDD, VDSP is zero, right? So that means that this is the place where those things, they're going to go. I think they're going to go back like this. Let's just check. So as I increase, as I make VDSP go negative here, right, it's going to move VDSN back this way, right? So if I do this over here, I'm going to have, here's going to be this guy right here going back like that is going to be now this guy right here going back like that, right? And then the next guy, this dude right here, is going to be this dude right here like that, right? And the next dude kind of goes like this, right? And the last one kind of like that, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so now let's write down what VN does each of these correspond with. Well, VGSN was equal to VN, right? So this is equals VN. Right here, equals VN. Now, I guess we need to make some kind of a loop around here, right? Because I'd like to figure out what VGSP is. So let's write that down here. VGSP equals going from here to here is VDD. So I guess if I do VGSP, it's going to equal VGSN or VN, right? VN from here to here. And then minus VDD. You agree? There's VDD is like from here to there. This is VDD, right? So I take this, and then if that were a plus, I'd add it, but since it's a minus, I subtract it, right? Okay, so VGSP is equal to that. So when VGSP is equal to V threshold, that would be VGSP equals V threshold. We'd have VN, V Vn minus VDD has to be, well, maybe what I need to do is solve for Vn here. Vn equals VGSP plus VDD, right? So I'm going to try and label what's, you know, what's what. I mean, over here I could label this is VGSP equals V threshold, right? P. And this is VGSP equals V threshold P plus, no, minus 1, right? Did I do that right here? I didn't really do that here. VGSP equals V threshold minus 1. VGSP equals V threshold P minus 2. VGSP equals V threshold P minus 3, right? Okay, so this would be VGSP equals V threshold P minus 2. And VGSP equals V threshold P minus 3. Okay, so if I'm looking at this one right down here, if I say, so how does V threshold P compare with V threshold N? Well, approximately, we could say V threshold P is approximately minus V threshold N, right? Does that make sense? Okay, so if VGSP equals V threshold P, then we'd have V threshold P plus VDD, right? Which is minus V threshold N plus VDD for down here, right? So this would be Vn equals VDD minus V threshold N, right? Is that right? Is that right? Okay, and this would be Vn equals VDD, I'm trolling right here, VDD plus VGSP, which is minus VGS, V threshold N, V threshold N, and then it's going to be minus 1, right? And so on. This would be Vn equals VDD minus V threshold N minus 2. And this would be VDD equals V threshold N minus...
Do you mean Vn?
No, I didn't. It needs to be VDD, right? And it's Vn. Vn equals VDD minus V threshold N minus 3. Okay. So just for kicks, let's suppose V threshold N equals 2 volts, okay? And VDD equals 5 volts, okay? So if that's the case, then this Vn right here is 5 volts minus 5 volts. This would be Vn equals 0 on the top, right? So if Vn equals 0, we're somewhere on this red line right here, right? And if Vn equals 0, we're somewhere on this green line on the bottom, right? So if we look at what the intersection is, let me do that in blue maybe. The intersection is one point right here, which is it's got to be on the green line, right? It has to be on that line, right? Isn't that what we said? Vn, if we're starting out at Vn equals 0, that would be 5 minus 2 minus 3 is 0, right here. So I'm on this curve right here, but I also have to be on that green curve, so I'm right there. This is Vn equals 0, okay? Now let's find Vn equals 1, okay? Where is Vn equals 1? Well, it looks to me like Vn is VGSn, so I'm on this curve right here now, right? And I have to be on this curve right there, right? So this point right here is, this is Vn equals 1 volt. Okay?
So why?
Okay, well, let's just check with VGS, Vn equals VGSn. So this is V threshold. Oh, no. Is that right? No, that's not right. Okay, so V threshold is 2, right? That would be 3, right? So I'm not up there yet, are we? Okay, so I went the wrong way. I need to look at the red ones. Okay, so let's see. We were on this line. Now we're on this red line right here because we made Vn equal 1. If this is 1 equals 5 minus 2, right? So I'm trying to make Vn equal 1. What is... Yeah, 5 minus 4 is 1, right? So I'm on this red curve right here somewhere. Vn equals 1 is somewhere on that curve, right? And Vn equals 1 is down here. So this is also, Vn equals 1 is still right there at that same point, right? Right here. And this is also Vn equals 1, right? Still right there. But now we're on this red line. Right. Okay, now Vn equals 2. Vn equals 2 is still right there because V threshold is 2. So this is, and maybe I'll just put a comma 2 there, okay? Maybe I should just do this. Let's make this a little less busy and just say 0, 1, and 2 volts, okay? Okay, now as Vn equals 3, now I'm going to pop up to this green puppy here, right? And the green puppy, it's got to intersect with the green puppy and right over here, I guess this guy, right? Right? So here we go. So it somehow got over to here. And this is Vn equals 3, 4, and 5, right? 0, 1, and 2, 3, 4, and 5. Okay. So I guess what we need to do is we need to...
find in between.
Yeah, what would it be? It was somewhere between 2.5 would be the one to look at, right?
Yes.
Okay, so 2.5. So this would be V threshold plus 1.5, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be this guy right here, right here, right? Actually, it should be a little higher than that, but I guess I'll take it, whatever. Okay, this is VGSn equals V threshold n plus 1.5 volts. Okay, is that right? Did I do that right?
I think we want to be on the underside of it, don't we?
No, but I'm doing the green ones right here. They go up, right?
Yeah,
plus 0.5, not 1.5,
because that's just going to stick us right back at that
little
corner.
Then that's less than
I want 2.5, right?
Yeah.
I want 2.5. I got the wrong thing. I need 2.5. I didn't get the one in between. It's got to be between 2 and 3, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so 2.5, that's going to be right up here, right?
Is our lowest line.
The
threshold is 2, so we want to add 0.5 to it. So the one would be between the bottom green and the bottom.
Okay, so this is 0, 1, 2, right?
No, the bottom one is 0, 1, and 2. And
zero, right, this is 0, 1, and 2, but this is plus 1, plus... So I want plus...
Plus 0.5,
right?
Yeah.
So that would be right in here, 2.5, yeah. Right? Okay. So here's... This is... This guy right here is VGSN equals VTH plus 0.5. Okay, so what happens here, and now I need to do the red one, right? And the red one will be a similar kind of a deal going like this, back this way, right? And this is, so what I'm going to have right here is I'm going to have a thing right there. So this thing kind of goes like this and like that. Okay? As you move VGS. Did I do that right? Okay.
We want V in 2.5, right? That would be
2.5.
That would be V in 1.5. The red needs to be up. We need to subtract 1.5.
Yeah, that's 2.5, right? Yeah, that's 2.5. It's 5 minus 2 is 3. Is it track 0.5?
Okay. Oh, I'm looking for that. Not 2.5.
5 minus 2.
See, it's right in the middle between this 3, 4, 5 and 1, 2, 3, so 2.5 should be right there, right? I think that's okay. So it kind of goes up kind of like this probably, and down like there. So you can see what's happening, that right in the middle here we're actually conducting a little bit, right? Anytime you move your trajectory over into a region where there is both current and voltage that are non-zero, you're going to have power dissipation, right? And so you can see that while you're moving from here to there, you're dissipating power. And you need to kind of look and see how long does it take to switch, because... You know, that's going to give you an idea of how much power you dissipate every time you switch. And of course, you know, then you have to look at your clock speed, you know, how often do you switch, and that'll give you an idea of how much, you know, average power you're going to give, or, you know, use up here for this inverter. But I thought this is kind of a nice example. By the way, if you don't totally understand this, you know, it's in your book, you can look at it. Right? They actually do this in your book. And I thought this was a nice example so you could see how to do a load line analysis when you're not using a resistor and a VTH. You know, it's not just a Thevenin source. The Thevenin source makes it very easy because, of course, then it's this kind of a line which you're all familiar with right here, and it makes it very easy to understand what's going on there. This is a little more tricky.
So what would this inverter be used for?
For an inverter, you know, like in logic when you want to change the gates, right? And you'd also remember last day we looked at some NAND gates and whatever, right? You can use the same kind of technology to do NAND gates and NOR gates and whatever. And so... It's just a way of making logic so that it doesn't use as much power. And the idea is use two switches. And that idea is the thing that makes it so we can have computers that fit in our pockets now. So, are there any questions on this thing? Is it okay? I'm assuming that's okay then. And you can kind of see what happened here. What I'd like to do next is I'd like to look at another application here called a transmission gate. That's what I'd like to look at. This is actually, this is a circuit that's useful in digital circuits. It's also useful in analog circuits. And what the problem that it tries to solve is this. Suppose we would like to have a switch, a really good switch, that would work on anything, say, you know, between plus and minus 15 volts, perhaps, if you're thinking about it in the analog domain. You'd like to make a switch that works between plus and minus 15 volts, and it has a very low on resistance. You know, the diodes kind of worked, right? I mean, they were useful. But we'd like a switch that would work for large signals as well, not just small signals. And we'd like to have it really on or really off. And so these field effect transistors that we've been looking at, these MOSFETs, you know, this looks like some pretty nice switching here. You know, remember I talked about RDS on, this RDS on, we could go look up some of those, you know, switches, and you can get RDS on down in the milliohms, okay? So very, very low resistance when this thing is turned on well. So how could we use a couple of these guys to do a switch? So that's kind of what we want to look at. How do we make a switch? Once we make an analog one, then we'll apply it to digital things, okay? An analog switch. And by the way, you know, these things are, you know, have been useful for a while, okay? I remember when I went to Guam, like probably back in 90, when was it? Must have been 93 or 4, somewhere in there. And I was helping out at Adventist World Radio, and when I was out there, I read about a fancy new circuit they were putting in the really expensive European transmitters that in those days, and they had an advertising brochure written for engineers, of course, because those are the guys who are going to say, well, buy this or don't, right? And, of course, advertising brochures written for engineers are kind of, you know, they have to tell what's going on because the engineer wants to know what's going on. So I'm reading this brochure, and it talks about the circuit. And the circuit was called dynamic carrier control circuit. And what it does, you see, when you have an AM transmitter, which is the kind of transmitters Adventist World Radio uses to send out, you know, Christian message to China and so on, when there's silence, you're sending out 100 kilowatts, so just a cosine wave that's 100 kilowatts, right? Now that seems kind of dumb in all respects because if you think about it, if you just turned off your transmitter, you'd also be sending off silence, and it costs you a lot of money per kilowatt hour on Guam. In fact, in those days, it was something like $19,000 a month they were paying, you know, for electricity. Right, and it's just basically, it's all because way back in the beginning when they came up with the protocol, and you guys need to think about this because possibly some of you will be involved in developing protocols. And you need to realize when you're developing a protocol that you need to be thinking about the future a long ways into the future because your decisions can make a tremendous difference what happens in the future. And so back when they were coming up with the amplitude modulation protocol for radios, they came up with it because you could build really cheap receivers really easy. You know, I probably showed you, you know, how you remember that little crystal radio set. I showed you how you could build it with just a diode and a tuned circuit, right, and an antenna on a ground. Well, that's why they came up with amplitude modulation, because a simple receiver could then be built and you could have receivers everywhere for cheap. And in the early days, you know, even the diode was not cheap, right? So, you know, they came up with this protocol, but then, you know, 100 years later, it's still being used, right? And it has this disadvantage that, yeah, while you're sending out silence, you're sending out, you know, paying a big bill for it, right? Well, that's kind of a disadvantage if you're the guy paying the bill. And so they were advertising this circuit. What it would do when HMS Richards takes a breath, it would just turn down the carrier, and they had done a bunch of research and testing to find out the best way to turn it down, and they actually described how they turned it down as a function of how loud HMS Richards was talking. And so I was reading this brochure and, thinking about their power bill, I thought, really we should put something like this, figure this out and modify this transmitter so that it would do this, right? And they had two transmitters at that time, so seemed like a good thing. So I kept trying to bug the engineers there to do that after I left Guam. And, for one reason or other, there was always some other thing they had to work on and they never got around to it. And then finally they transferred the guy who was really twisting his arm. He was the guy who was probably the most capable of doing that. They transferred him to Costa Rica. And so I was also supposed to help them tune up some new antennas in Costa Rica. They had a transmitter station down there, and it was coming around to, I spent pretty much a whole summer waiting for them to call me up and tell me I should come down and do that. But the whole summer they, just didn't get the antennas up and didn't get them up and didn't get them up. And so I ended up not going anywhere that summer really much. I just kind of hung around here. And then Christmas break came along, or just about Christmas break time, just about a week or two before Christmas break. And they said, well, we'll do it on Christmas break. Well, so then I talked to Norman down there. He was the engineer down there. He said, Rob, we're still not ready for this. But then he turned the tables on me and he said, well, you should go to Guam and do that dynamic carrier control circuit. And so I thought, well, maybe I should, but it's really hard to get tickets to Guam Christmas time because Guam is kind of like the Hawaii for Japan. When you go to Guam, it's just crawling with Japanese tourists. And it's very hard to get a ticket there, in the Christmas time, because that's like high tourist season there. I mean, you want to leave Japan, it's cold there in Christmas, just like here, right? And so somehow I ended up getting tickets. There was another friend of mine, an old guy named Al McDowell. He's still around. He was actually in World War II. He was in Pearl Harbor when they were bombing it. He was in one of the battleships there. And so anyway, he was an Adventist World Radio person, and he spent a lot of time with his travel agent and found me one-way ticket over there, and I'd have to come back on standby. Well, I said, oh, that's great. I'll just go over there. If I get stuck there, as I'm stuck in paradise, no problem, right? So I went over there, and I've never had an engineering project go so quickly and easily, and I didn't have any time to prepare for it. I asked Ralph, he just put together a whole bunch of op amps and A to D converters, D to A converter, any kind of chip he figured I might be able to use. He put it in these boxes and he had a pile of data sheets like this. And I hadn't thought about, but once you get to Guam in those days, you aren't going to, get FedEx delivery. It's going to be 2 weeks and then my vacation is over, right? So anyway, I went out there and we put this thing together on a little breadboard, it was a little op amp circuit, and it used these kind of analog switches. He'd put some of those kind of things in there. And these analog switches I would use to do logic on things, because if you looked at the curves for the thing, if it was greater than this, you wanted to do one thing. If it was less than this, you wanted to do another. It actually turns out if HMS Richards completely goes silent, then they actually want to turn up the carrier a little bit, because if there's any kind of interference in the background, that makes it so that it really does sound like silence. And then they turn it down and go to a place, and then at a certain place they kind of level it off, and then once they have to really, he's really pounding the pulpit, he's got to go back up again, right? So I had these analog switches, which would basically, we were doing all this stuff in op amps, and we built the thing, and we needed one resistor. There was one resistor we needed. It was a resistor for this is high power stuff. So it went on the screen of the final amplifier tubes, and it had to be something like 150-watt resistor or something, And it's just like they have, kind of like we do upstairs, They have these little drawers with all these little quarter-watt resistors in them, right? And I'm thinking, man, if we took every resistor in this pile here, and somehow figured out how to hook it up in series and parallel, maybe we could build one, right?
And when we were all, there was a bunch of us engineers sitting there in the transmitter room, you know, wondering how we're going to do this, not wanting to even think about it. You know, it's like, oh, this is horrible, right? And the maintenance man, you know, he was a volunteer maintenance man, and he came walking by and he heard us, you know, grumbling and wondering what we were going to do, you know. And he said, oh, hey, I was out at the dump Sunday. This was like on a Monday. I was out at the dump Sunday, and the Air Force was throwing out all this stuff. It looked like it might be electronic stuff. So it was brand new in the package, and I couldn't just let it sit there. So I brought it back, and I stuck it in my locker. Let me go see. Maybe it's what you need. And so he opens up his locker, and he pulls out these bags. I don't know if you've ever seen how the Air Force or the Army packages things, but it's like packed for World War III, you know? I mean, and they were, you know, they were aluminum foil inside, and then there was some brown paper bag kind of material, but it was like packed so that, you know, absolutely nothing could happen to it. So when they threw it in the dump, you know, it was just fine. Yeah. So we pulled these things open, and it was exactly what the resistor we needed, and exactly there. So it was like, you know, God just made everything work out. And what's more, I was done with the project in a week, and I had like 2.5 weeks there, right? So it just so happened that my wife now, she was there on vacation from Thailand because she was a pastor in Bangkok. She came over there, and I didn't know she was going to be there, and she didn't know I was going to be there, and probably if she'd known I was going to be there, she wouldn't have been there. But that was the first time she decided I wasn't a stuffy old professor, so that was a really great thing for me all the way around. So these analog switches, you know, they have a good place in my heart here. So let's see, how can we do this thing here? We've got something coming in here, right? We're going to have something coming out. And basically the idea is I want something like this, right? And it needs to be, you know, controlled by a voltage, right? Like in my case, I was using a comparator to control it. You know, if it's greater than this, do this. So switch this in. If it's less than this, switch that in, right? So we could put a MOSFET in there. That seems like a reasonable kind of an idea. So I'm just going to put one of these guys because it seems like the thing to do. If I just put, you know.
Are the MOSFETs you use in the transmission tower bigger than the ones we've seen?
Well, if you have a high power MOSFET, it's going to be bigger, yeah. I mean, the ones I was using, this was down to low level stuff because we could control that kind of stuff. Most of it down at low level. There was only just a few places where we needed really high power components, fortunately. And it's actually the transmitter runs on kind of a thing like pulse width modulation. I don't know if you guys did a little bit of that with embedded or something, right? And you know the way they would do it is they would have a triangle wave like this. You know, this is down in low level voltage, you know, plus and minus 15 volt kind of stuff. They'd have a triangle wave, and then they'd compare the audio to it. In other words, you look at the audio. When the audio was big, you'd get a little bit of a pulse, and when it's small, you get a big pulse or whatever. You know, so it would change that. Doing a comparison between a triangle wave and the input wave would tell you whether you were putting out high voltage or low voltage. And so I could just do my stuff down at low voltage, except for I needed to know what the screen, you know, I had to measure the screen current on this, you know, great big gigantic powerful tube, and I needed that resistor. So anyway, let's just think about this. We can put this thing in here right now, and how are we going to make this thing work? So first of all, you're going to have to decide which side is the source, right? That's the problem, or part of the problem is, you see, if I make this, if this is VGS right here, and this is VN over here, if this is VGS right here, this is VGS, this would be the source and the gate, right? Then if I make VN go positive here, right, I'm messing with VGS, right?
And so the way to get around that is kind of like this. Suppose we do a thing like this. Yeah, we kind of got the idea with the P and the N channel, right? So if I make this guy was an N channel right here, because if I'm assuming VGS positive here, N channel points in like that, then maybe I could make this guy right here a P channel, or something, so that when I looked at VGS here, if this is the source and this is the gate right here, if I make, let's see, if I make VN positive right here, so that this VGS gets almost zero, so it turns off this FET right here, then if this guy's positive, this VGS, I need to make this gate here negative right here to turn it on, right? But it'll make this guy more a bigger voltage VGS here to turn this on even better. So if it turns this guy off, it'll turn that guy on, right? And vice versa, yeah. That's the trick to this thing. And then you have to think about where you're going to put these guys right here, these two things right here. So this guy is the P channel, so if we put this to like, is this like plus 15 or something, and this be minus 15? Is that right? Because I want, you know, I want this guy reverse biased here. I don't want to, kind of like we did with the gates, right? We ran the substrate to the most positive or negative power supply, right? And then if you notice here, this guy, if I have V control, this guy, if I run him into here, this has to be V control not has to go in here, right? Because this guy needs to go negative when that guy goes positive, kind of thing, right? Does that make sense? So
like the gate voltages also change, or are they?
Well, you got some voltage here. Suppose we just put in zero here. Then to turn this thing on, I need to make this VGS very negative right here, right?
Oh, okay.
So this guy needs to go to a negative voltage, and this guy, I need to make this VGS positive, so that have to go to a positive voltage. So next day we'll figure out how to make this, use this for like a digital circuit.